Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. That's Marcellus Wiley. No. That dude. That Charger blue you got on. Coming up, we'll tell you if Dez Bryant will actually help the Saints.
And I've got another installment of the Emmy Award-winning That Dude's Dudes. But today we start the show a little differently. What you got, big dog?
Well, we got some special guests. One, we have TJ Houshmandzadeh.
All right.
Former Bengals wide receiver. But most importantly, we have Hugh Jackson here, former Cleveland Browns head coach, fired just 2 weeks ago or 10 days ago from the Browns after going 336-1. Hugh, I've been dying to have a conversation with you for a long time. I got to get right to it, Hugh.
Let's do it.
Ego, man. Mm-hmm. I think you are an extremely talented football coach.
Mm-hmm.
But I think ego has undermined your career as a head football coach in the NFL. How do you respond?
Well, I respect your opinion. I don't really see it that way. You know, I see ego as edging out God, and God is the leader of my life. So I understand that there is a opinion about people. And as you go forward or however you go about it, people are going to have their thoughts about who you are and what you are. But at the end of the day, I think you do what you think you need to do to be successful. And that's all you can do.
We talked a little bit before the show. Your climb is incredible, from South Central Los Angeles.
Yay, yay.
The real South Central Los Angeles.
Yes, yes, this side of the board. This side
all
of the
desk. The way to NFL head coach. And to me, NFL head coach is at the top of the pyramid of corporate America.
Mm-hmm.
And it requires a politics that if you can't tame the bravado, the confidence, the paranoia that helped you survive South Central and climb all the way up there. If once you get there, you can't tame all those elements mm-hmm. and play the political game, that's where you fail. And that's what I see a guy that used his bravado, his confidence, his paranoia to get to the top, but wasn't able to tame it once he got to the top.
And again, as I said, that's your opinion, and I respect that. But there is some of that. You do have to have that toughness, that swagger, as what they say now, to climb. But as you climb, you start learning different ways to deal with everybody. You know, I think what I needed to do in Oakland was much different than what I needed to do in Cleveland. You know, that was totally different situations. And so you do learn. You know, you take a little bit of what is good and what is bad, and you continue to move forward.
You admitted to me before the show, mm-hmm. though, that in Oakland, this perhaps was an issue.
Oh, absolutely it was. I'll be the first to tell you that. I would never say that it wasn't, because I truly believe that at the time, at Oakland, we needed something to get excited about. There was a ton of losing there that had gone on. So now let's fast forward to Cleveland. I didn't think that was needed, even though that situation was kind of the same. Didn't win a lot of games. I didn't come in there, you know, with a whole bunch of here we go. I just knew there were some things that needed to be done correctly to get to winning.
Man, I appreciate you being candid up here. And I guess if I want you to be candid and testify, I got to give you a little testimony.
Well, bring it
man.
On. Come on.
It's interesting. I've been the best at the position. I've had tremendous success, and then I've also been the worst out there. I mean, I went 13 sacks one season to zero sacks and a few seasons after that, and the highs and lows, and people were sitting there on the outside. Who is that guy? Hugh Jackson, you used to be the quarterback whisperer. You used to be the guy that could call all the plays and get the ball in the end zone. And then you flip and you look at a 336-1 coach. Tell me, scout Hugh Jackson, what went wrong?
Hugh Jackson didn't get it done, period. I mean, I don't care how you scout it. at the end of the day, you're still the head of it. I was the head of it. I wasn't able to make it happen. When I look back at it, there's a lot of things in hindsight you wish you can do different, but I didn't. And that's why I'm sitting here with you today. At the end of the day, I didn't get it done.
Yeah, but I need to bring you back into that meeting room, coach, into that locker room, because we sat there and you know we got a double-sided one sheet.
Yes, we
pros
do.
And cons from Peyton Manning, Tom Brady on down, and everyone has something on both sides of that
right?
sheet. I need to flip that sheet over. I'm looking at cons right now. Hugh Jackson. What didn't go right or as designed in Cleveland?
Well, I think at the end of the day, I think when you walk into those situations like Cleveland, you know, the lens that you're really looking through is still the lens from the coach before. So when you walk in there, I think the whole process, I know when I take a job, I'm just like any other coach, they didn't win because of me. And then once you get into it, you start to look around and go, wait a minute, it's a little bit more than what I thought it was. And then there's some things you need to work through and walk through with everybody. But at the end of the day, if you don't get everybody on the same page, if you don't get everybody pulling the rope the same way, then it may not happen the right way for you. And sometimes it might just take one thing that can make a difference in you either being in Cleveland and still coaching or sitting here right now.
One more, coach. Okay, so we're pulling this rope, and you don't need but one thing, one person. And I played before with Todd Haley, and there's a lot of conversation about your relationship. Just set the record straight. Was that a conducive relationship for you guys to go out there and be successful?
There's no doubt it was. I mean, because we were. There was two games that we won. Now, are there some things that Todd and myself could have done differently as we started to move forward? There's no question about that. But as we keep talking about Todd, it was the same thing with Greg Williams. It was the same thing with Amos Jones. I mean, I was the head coach of the football team, so I'm going to have disagreements with every coach at some point in time. That just happens. But at the end of the day, I mean, we were very functional as a group to go out and compete and play.
Hugh, I don't understand how you can say that. I've heard the general manager say discord, and I've heard your explanation of it. But when I see the organization basically, to me, force an offensive play caller on you, and you may disagree with that, but that's the way it looks from the media from the outside.
Okay.
They forced it off. And then you disengage throughout the offseason and through the early part of the season. You're not in the meetings. You're not really, according to reports,
well,
you can set the record straight. Set the record straight.
Gotcha.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, you just said it. I never would disengage. So I was the head coach of the team. I was involved in defensive meetings finally, you know, for a time that I wasn't. Still totally involved in knowing exactly what was going on offense. Involved in special teams meetings. And I needed to in the beginning. I'm talking about during the offseason, give the offensive coordinator a chance to let his personality show with his staff. I didn't need to come in there, be right in there from day one and undermine what he was trying to do because that staff was put together by me. So I needed to allow him to be the best version of himself also.
They give you the greatest prize in football,
the
number one pick, and it's a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And you spend the offseason disengaged?
No. Let's back up. The number one pick wasn't there at that time. So let's get this right. I said when he first came in, when the coordinator first came in, there was no draft picks at that time. Once the draft pick was on the team, I knew exactly what we were doing in offense, and I was in those meetings. So to say that I wasn't, I don't know where that came from.
And you don't feel like that John Dorsey is sitting there saying, because, again, according to reports and some of the quotes I've seen your name on, you were wanted back control of play calling and tried to go to Jimmy Haslam, the owner, to get it. Is that accurate?
That is accurate. At the end, that's after watching everything from training camp to preseason through eight games of the regular season, finally looking and saying, wait a minute, this is not trending in the right direction for our offensive football team and for the quarterback.
And so how could he not say, that's the discord he's talking about. I'm the general manager. You report to me. You're going to the owner to try. Why aren't you going through John Dorsey?
Back up. I didn't report to John Dorsey. See, you got this wrong. Okay. That's not the way the organization.
Set the record straight.
That's not the way the organization was set up.
That's
the organization was set up. Hugh Jackson reports to Jimmy Haslam and then talks to John Dorsey. So both of those guys knew exactly where I was. That discord that we're talking about has nothing to do with John Dorsey thinking that you were undermining him by going to Jimmy. Has nothing to do with
it. How about your comments in the media publicly where, again, from the outside, it looks like that looks like discord when you're talking to the media about, I need to get back involved with the offense. They obviously need some help. That, to me, was a signal to somebody that you were unhappy with the current setup? Because I just don't believe coaches are that transparent with the media.
It wasn't the current setup. I was unhappy with the way we were playing in the first half of games. If you go back and check it, you'll see that we were struggling in the first half of games. If I knew if I could flip that and make that better, then we had a chance to win.
By the script?
Not so much by the script. Flip it by whatever I thought was going to be necessary to fix, to get our team to play better in the first half. So when I looked at that, all I said is I wanted to help. Now, the sound bites and all those other things that come out, I don't get to control those. I said I wanted to go back in and help. And then what was said to me is, well, why would you want to do that? And I know why people would say why. Well, you're 1-15, 0-16. People forgot that you can coach offense. So what I said is, hey, looky here, it shouldn't matter what you guys are thinking. I'm the head coach. You know, as a head coach, you can walk into whatever unit that you want to and make those particular decisions. That's all that was about.
Take me to your darkest moments in its two, almost 3 years of being the head coach. I mean, keep it South Central, too.
Let's go.
I mean, if we ever saw a coach, like, you're not going to Dorsey High School like you did and saying, yeah, I'm going to play for the coach that won three games in the last 3 years. You were that coach at the highest level in the NFL. The deepest frustrations you had when you were at your darkest place?
Oh, my gosh. There were so many. Because I don't like losing. I mean, losing is not why you take these jobs. You don't take these jobs to be on 16 and 1-15. You take these jobs to win. To every week have to get up in front of that team and motivate them to get them to compete and play and find a way to do everything you can to put them in position to compete. That was tough. That was hard within itself. And again, I thank the organization for always assisting me and doing whatever I thought was needed to continue to motivate these men week in and week out to play as hard as they could.
Listen, Hugh, it sounds like I'm being incredibly hard on you.
Bring it on. I'm actually being easy.
I'm being hard on myself because I swear I see a lot of myself in you. You work under Marvin Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
Marvin Lewis, to me, the reason why he survived is because he knew how to walk that delicate balance between I'm going to be cool with the players, but I'm also going to have a relationship with management.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I've struggled in my career.
Mm-hmm.
I like to manage down, and I don't manage up well at all. And I've had to course correct on that. And I see you as a player's coach that doesn't manage up that well.
Well, I will say to you again, I don't think you've been around me or no. Because that's not the case at all. I still, to this day, have good relationships with Jimmy Haslam and D. Haslam. And
they
hopefully
just fired you.
But that don't mean that you have bad relationships. At the end of the day,
yes, it does.
No, it doesn't. To you, it does. See, in my mind, they fired a man for a job he was doing. They didn't fire the person. They fired the man and the job he was doing. I didn't win enough
games. Part of the job is managing the people above you and managing the people on the ground.
Well, but I still, like I said, to me, when you look at these situations at the end of the day, we didn't win enough games, period. There's no other way.
I don't think anybody that's ever watched you coach doesn't believe you're a good football coach, a very good football coach. And so when I hear John Dorsey and what they said was, not that you're a bad coach, they said you've managed this situation improperly. That's what they said.
Well,
You're in denial of that.
No, well, you can say I'm in denial. I don't think that what was said that way about internal discord, which that's what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I don't think that was the number one reason why Hugh Jackson's not sitting there.
Wow.
I don't think
what was the number one reason?
Winning. We did not win enough games. And number two, the one guy who is the most important guy of that organization was trending downwards, the quarterback.
Hugh, I could sit here and I had a lot of success in my career,
mm-hmm.
but I still managed up poorly. And so you're right. Winning covers up all kinds of weaknesses mm-hmm. and people overlook all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean that you were there wasn't discord in your relationship, not just with your assistant coaches, but with John Dorsey and Jimmy Haslam as well.
Well, I will agree with you this way, Coach. I mean, let's be real. If you go 0-16 and then 1-15, and you still survive that to come back and coach a third year, maybe you are managing up pretty well, because nowhere else are you looking at a 1-31 coach and you're saying, give him another opportunity. I will go here, though. We always heard that the reason we didn't win is because ABC. And I'm not hearing enough of the ABC to see why you didn't win when you have a collection of NFL players.
Right, but at the end of the day, Marcellus, it doesn't matter about ABC because I was at the top. So when you were at the top, you got to take that responsibility. At the end of the day, it was mine to do. I wasn't able to get it done. Plain and simple.
You know what's mind-boggling to me just sitting here listening to this is when you're the head coach, you shouldn't have... It should be the offense ain't playing well, I'm getting involved. Period. I'm the head coach. Every team you've been on, when the head coach wanted to do something,
yeah,
it's done. When the head coach wants so-and-so in the game and he ain't playing, so-and-so's in the game. And so from the get-go, Todd Haley is from... on the outside looking in, very high strung, he wants it his way. When you said in that, and I'm like everybody else, you just watch the interview, I need to get more involved. They're not moving the ball. They got good pieces on offense. They had a great defense. He shouldn't have to say, oh, I would like to get involved and help. I'm getting involved and I'm helping. Ty Haley, you hear that? That's what we're doing on Monday.
Yeah.
That's what should have been, but because of the structure and Haslam and Dorsey knew Haley was in there, it was his way of saying, I would like to get involved. I hope you guys are amenable to that and you guys hear me. You know, when you're the head of anything, if you say you want to get involved, you get involved. It was like, is it okay if I get involved? So that lets you know right there that your hands are tied. They being politically correct. Yeah. I ain't.
Because you played for him 4 years.
Yeah.
So you understand his gifts and his talents.
Yeah.
Is that accurate in your opinion? Because if it is, that would go to my deal that in order to come back for this third year, there were some handcuffs you had to agree to put on.
No, it wasn't a handcuff of hiring a coordinator, because that's where you want to go with it. I made that decision.
Todd Haley. There's a bunch of decisions you could make.
You got the porcupine coming in, Coach. I love Todd Haley, but boy, he a bracer.
Now,
man.
I will say this.
Come on now.
We made a decision as an organization for me to become the CEO head coach, something I've never done, okay? In a collaborative decision, we said, Hugh, this is probably what we need to do to continue to move forward and get this team where it needs to be. I hired who I thought was the best guy at the time to fit the position. When I look back on it, I should have done it myself. I mean, and again, I have nobody to blame for that but me. I can't look...
You had that option, in your opinion.
No doubt I had that option. I had the option to either not hire him or hire him, and I hired him. And that is on me. No different than I hired Greg Williams. I know the personalities I was dealing with. I know the people I was bringing into the building. That's what I thought our football team needed. Because if we were going to make a change, if we were going to change the narrative, we need to be good on defense, we need to be good on offense, we need to be better on special.
It sounds like I'm just coming at you. I'm coming at myself.
No, you're fine.
Because I see the same thing. That's ego, Hugh. I can have Todd Haley and Greg Williams on my staff. I'm so great, I can control people who have never been controlled. Greg Williams disciplined by the NFL, Todd Haley fired everywhere he's ever been, and a bullish, he's got the same ego as you. No way I would have been sitting there thinking, damn, I can handle all of this.
I'm glad you think that.
Every coach in the NFL from quality control all the way up has an ego.
Oh, yeah.
Every coach has an ego.
They're all different sizes.
It's just the way, it's the way you show it. Yeah. If you don't have an ego, you're not coaching in the league.
Well, let's get to the million-dollar question and let's stop dancing. Because everyone has always asked, can you win in Cleveland? And I know Hugh Jackson bet on himself and he knows he's a tremendous coach. But boy, did Cleveland eat you up and spit you out to the tune of 336-1 by record only. Now I ask you that question again. Can someone win in Cleveland and how?
I think they can. There's no question in my mind. Somebody's going to conquer this. There's been a lot of great coaches before me that's coached there, that's went on, and they're still doing great. There'll be a lot of great coaches.
Let me finish. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
There's going to be a lot of great coaches after me that's going to come there and try to conquer this thing. There's no question I think you can win. Do they need to continue to align the organization and do the things that they feel they need to do to get there? There's no question. Are they starting to accumulate a lot of young talent to put in place to give themselves a chance to win? Yes, they are. I truly believe that Jimmy Haslam and D. Haslam and John Dorsey will start to truly get this right now because I think we laid the proper groundwork, to get this place where it needs to be.
This is not revisionist history. This is what I thought at the time, and I believe I said it. I didn't like you taking the Cleveland job. Coaches go there to die. And I at that time, you were hot.
Mm-hmm.
You were the hot coordinator with Marvin Lewis. And I said, that's not all money ain't good money. It's like playing dominoes. All money.
And I'm behind him. Yeah. I'm behind him.
Big stakes.
So I'm just like, pump the brakes. And again, I go back to ego made you take that Cleveland job and work with some people that weren't football people.
But at the end of the day, Jason, I can't deny what you feel is what you feel. I keep saying that. But at the end of the day, I made a decision. I don't get to take it back now. I mean, I've earned the record I have. I've been in the situation I've been in. I'm going to move on from that. I want my career to keep treading the right
way. You think you'll get another shot to be a head coach?
I don't know that. It's not about being a head coach yet. It's about going back and restoring my name as a football coach. I think I need to go back and be a coordinator first. And if that's what's out in front of me, then that's what's out in front of me. But I need to go back and do what I do the way I do it, and then get back and let's assess all these situations as we move forward.
Mm. Love it.
Man, I appreciate you coming on.
Thank
here.
You.
Never scared, you. Hugh.
Never.
Man, look, you get another job, holler at your boy.
I came to Cincinnati. You know, I came to Cincinnati.
That boy for sure.
I came to Cincinnati once, and Marvin said, no, Hugh won't talk to you. And I was like, for real, man?
Oh, man. Put words in his mouth.
No, no, he said, I won't. We'll talk about it after. Time for some big stories. Whitlock and Wiley. TJ Houshmandzadeh is back, and we're joined now by D'Angelo Hall. Let's start with Dez Bryant, who finally has a new job months of meeting with various teams and tweeting about his old one. Dez reportedly will sign a one-year deal tomorrow with the New Orleans Saints, who are fresh off winning their battle for the NFC supremacy with the Rams. Our buddy Jay Glazer loves the move, tweeting, quote, Saints have the perfect locker room, perfect QB, and perfect head coach for Dez Bryant. The culture they've created is unique. Not sure if it's quite Dez-proof, though.
And, wow. There, huh?
I've had a lot of people try to talk me into this. They made an analogy to Andre Rison in 1996, I think, signing with the Green Bay Packers in November, caught a touchdown pass in the Super Bowl. Then the next year, he rebuilt his career. Then the next year, went to Kansas City, where I was, and had a few productive years there.
Spider-Man?
Yeah.
Spider-Man.
I just don't see it, though. I just don't know if Dez has any separation left in the tank. And maybe Sean Payton can draw him open and Drew Brees can throw him open, but I just don't know how I'm not confident Dez is going to be productive.
Disrespectful. Jason Whitlock, let some of that tension and some of that L that you've taken from the Hugh Jackson interview, let's leave that behind us and let's get positive on this situation. Dez Bryant, now being forced to have humble pie. And we always say that cliche, humble pie. But you need somebody to serve you that slice of pie. And when he gets into this offensive meeting room, it's going to be slices served a la mode. Here's the thing. You're not the best receiver on this team. That's Michael Thomas. You're not going to even get the second amount of touches and targets. That's going to be Alvin Kamara. You even got a Ben Watson sitting out there. He's going to be forced into a 3 or 4 role. Now let's talk about Dez Bryant at 30 years old, playing the 3 or 4 position for this team in this offensive passing game. He's getting separation against your 3rd or 4th corner, or if that is a corner, maybe your safety, whoever that is, your dime cornerback. I love this, and I love that he's in a unique dynamic, as we've heard Jay Glazer say. Drew Brees is no punk. I played with Drew Brees. Drew Brees is the most likable, no punk, no nonsense guy in terms of that balancing act. He's bilingual. He has everyone thinking that he's highbrow, because he is, and he could go down in the gutter with you, get you all riled up, get you pumped up before the game, and be down with you as well. So Drew Brees is going to make sure, one, I'm likable, so you ain't going to want to test me. Two, I got this if you really want to come at me, Dez Bryant. I think Dez is going to be perfect in this dynamic.
Me, I love it. The culture that was in Dallas and the culture that's in New Orleans is different. When you go basically to 9 months without a team and you don't get signed till week 9, 10, you've been humbled. And me, Golden Tate going to the Eagles, Demaryius Thomas going to Houston, I think Dez Bryant signing with the Saints is bigger than both of those. Dez Bryant can still play. When you talk best receivers in the league, you have to bring up Michael Thomas's name. It's not just Julio Jones and Antonio Brown. You have to bring up Michael Thomas. Dez Bryant is going to get open. And if he's not open, Drew Brees is going to throw him open. You're going to the most accurate quarterback in the league with one of the most innovative play callers in the league. Dez Bryant is going to look like the last year he had a great year was the last year he played with a complete throwing quarterback, and that's Tony. He's been playing with Dak Prescott. Yeah. So all of a sudden, it looks like he can't play. Now everybody going to say, oh, man, why was Dez Bryant on the street so long? Oh, man, Dez Bryant can still play. He's going to do extremely well.
Yeah, I mean, I think Dez definitely still has some left in the tank. But what's Dez mindset. That ultimately is going to be the deciding factor.
Ding, 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 ding.
If
ding.
He's successful or if he's not successful.
He should be really hungry.
And I think what Witt is just saying is that time has showed us that Dez just doesn't know how to tone it down. And that's what I'm fearful of.
Culture will he work being with the Cowboys his entire career?
D'Angelo, you don't
you
see
have
that?
No choice now.
Yes.
You were at home. Yes. He has no choice but to tone it down.
And be right.
Or she'll be right back home tomorrow.
Right. If he can't tone it down, he's out the league.
Bye bye.
So I hope he understands that. But can he fit in this offense? Absolutely. You talk about Ben Watson. Ben Watson came out with me for the draft. He's 37 years old.
Still getting it.
And he's the third leading receiver in this offense.
Right, still tilting.
Traquan Smith has 12 receptions on the year for 214 yards and 3 touchdowns. The man had 111 yards and 2 touchdowns against the Redskins in 1 game.
Yeah.
So they need help. And Dez Bryant, I think, can come in there, can run their offense, cannot be the focal point, but yet still make plays.
You hit on something right here, and we got to explore this. The reason Dez Bryant has been looked at as a malcontent is the same thing that happened up there in Seattle with the Legion of Boom. You got two different subcultures over there having a conflict, and we know what we called it in our locker room, soft belly. So soft belly was, okay, when things get rough, we face adversity. Who's leading this team, and are you down? Are you hard? Are you barking with us? Are you ready to bite? Or are you kind of like, oh, I'm going to say
runners.
Front runners saying the right things. Russell Wilson, right or wrong, was called a soft belly by a lot of cats on that team by behavior. The Earl Thomases of the world, the Cam Chancellors, the Richard Shermans was looking at Russell Wilson like, hey, bro, we over here looking at it this way. Dez Bryant was looking at Dak Prescott, a rookie. And he was like, yo, you soft belly, bro. We are facing adversity in our second year together. And I'm not seeing this come back from you. You go to Drew Brees with that. One, you're not even going to think about going at him like that because you think he's with you. But that was the issue that ignited Dez Bryant to becoming this malcontent. He wanted Dak to have the same spark that he had.
Dez Bryant wanted the football.
Yeah.
He's like every other damn receiver.
He should.
Keyshawn Johnson. Throw me the damn ball. All this soft belly, hard belly, belly, whatever. None of that. He wanted the football. He wanted his stats when the game was over so he could feel good about himself and be on his way to his next contract. He's not going to get the ball here the way he wants it. Dez Bryant thinks he's the number one receiver. The same way when I wake up every day, I think I'm Denzel Washington. Mm. We're delusional. You can't fix that delusion.
Don't you think Sean Payton and Drew Brees sat down in that meeting and told Dez Bryant exactly what your role is going to be, exactly what's going to happen?
TJ, you ever have a cousin come out of jail?
Listen.
And when they come out of jail, oh, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. I'm going to be in church every Sunday. I'm going to be... Soon as they get out of jail, what do?
They play the Bengals on Sunday and let him act like he don't remember that meeting. He'll be released on Monday.
Yeah, now this you is the my question. Do that.
You have any family come out of jail? They all sound good when they in
Man,
jail.
Man, look at that ponytail. You know a lot of family in the jail.
They all sound good when they in jail.
Hey, and if you can't live up to it, see ya.
There it is.
And he's no dummy.
Seems to love football, man. I think he'll get it right this time.
Yes.
I think he'll get it right because, like we said, it's that infrastructure there in New Orleans that's so much different.
The French Quarter.
Than what
man,
he's
watch
been
when he...
in Dallas,
hey,
though.
French Quarter.
Watch these playoffs.
They better get Dez in his character before, and he fixed that. Admit that. Dez Bryant.
Coming out of Oklahoma State.
He had his issue with whatever happened with his mother and that. Not forgetting that. But Dez Bryant... overall corrected a lot of the character conversation about him.
Turn on the tape. He was still throwing tantrums
on
the sidelines the last time we saw him
play. So when Tom Brady curses out Bill O'Brien.
That's emotion.
Tom Brady can curse out Bill O'Brien. It's fine, though. Dez can't curse at his teammates.
Hey, second leading receiver is Alvin Kamara. That's a problem.
The man got a handful of rings. He can do whatever he wants. Dez Bryant has no rings. Don't bring Tom Brady into this.
In a team game, there's no such thing. You do whatever you want because it's going to be
five rings, you do whatever you want.
You know, Tom Brady went at it. It's called passion. Dez Bryant does the same thing. It's
malcontent.
He's a problem. He's a character issue. He's like, dude, I watched the film with you, Dak. Throw me the damn ball. And then when you do throw the ball, throw it somewhere where it's catchable. Dez Bryant went from the penthouse to the outhouse.
There will be plaques. Of Tom Brady yelling at everybody in the Hall of Fame in Canton.
There will be none of Dez Bryant
but Dez Bryant
doing nothing.
Dez Bryant was a top five receiver, and then he realized he had dropped drastically, and that's why he's yelling. He's looking
because he can't get open. That's the issue.
It wasn't just that. Throw me open.
Hey, the playoffs, he gonna light it up. I truly believe that. I truly believe it.
I hope y'all right. I won't mind being wrong on that.
All right.
All right, welcome back. D'Angelo Hall and TJ Husmanzadeh are back.
Yeah.
You all know Marcellus is that dude. Now he's going to show us the best plays from big guys from around football. Marcellus, what you got?
You all know that you are Denzel Washington. And we're going to talk about the big uglies like Jason Whitlock. In the trenches, let's go to number three with Chiefs DN Dee Ford. It's time to blow the whistle.
Yeah.
Too short time right here. Now, look, I understand that this was a penalty, but there's still a teaching moment in this because guess what? When you're in the NFL, we got to learn from all of our experiences. Look how beautiful this is still, though. You see him lined up in a sprinter stance, and watch the first thing he does, which is not good, but look at that arm move. He is so far away from the offensive lineman, Chris Hubbard, 2.2 yards, but he's already engaged in his move. A little fear right there, but still, that throws off the timing with Chris Hubbard. He does a punch, but look at the elbow. It's broken. And look at the feet out of position. Ooh, that ain't cute. Look at them K-Swiss right there. So now he's all crossed over, and now you put that anchor leg in the ground. And you talk about some breaks. You get a stiff leg like that, it allows you to now do what you have to do, which is get that proper hip turn. Turn back upfield with the hips. The lower body is how you finish off a sack. And you can see Dee Ford, number three, that dude. Now, stay on sides next week, brother. Number two, let's go to Louisiana Tech. Collegiate level, defensive end, Jalen Ferguson. Fergalicious up here. Wop, wop. Woo, look at that hump
oh,
move.
Oh, man.
Reggie White, rest in peace right there, huh? Leads the country with 12 and a half sacks, this guy does. Let's talk about it right now. He gets off his rush poorly. He replaces his feet. That's not good. But at the same time, look at that spacing right there. Now you're talking about that hip turn again. You see offensive lineman starts to commit upfield. What do? You get the elbow, you get the wrist, and you stop all of your momentum, push the brakes, and look at that offensive lineman out of position. Now, Reggie White, who made this go, get him. Shoot him out of a cannon right now. Let's see him. Oh, boom. Oh, we got good sound effects. Get it all the way to the quarterback. Lay him down gently. Clay Matthews, that's how you do it. Second place that dude, Fergalicious, Jalen Ferguson. Now let's get to our number one that dude of the week, Minnesota Vikings. Defensive end, Daniel Hunter. Lion Hunter over here. 9 tackles, 3.5 sacks. Leads the NFL with 11 and a half sacks. Look at this boy out there. NFC Defensive Player of the Week. My man got game right here. Look out for him right now. Hunter going to start off in that Hugh Douglas 4-point stance, froggy style. And then you see him get up the field. First thing you see is, ooh, it's time to swat. Look at those hands. Hey, 71, get your hands on me. Oh, you don't? Now I'm going to swat them. And then I'm going to hit you with the swim and a little bit of a dent move. Collapse the elbow, collapse you from that place. There's nothing you could do once your left arms collapse. But now it's time to disengage. As I'm still being held, will you let me go? Will you please let me go? I say prom night over here holding on to me like that. Look at this. Matt Stafford, you better get out the way because here I come, no matter how much you hold me. Now it's time for my man Daniel Hunter to finish it off. Number one, that dude of the week, Daniel Hunter. Lion Hunter.
Where the offensive lineman at, man, next week?
I got next you next week. Next
man,
week.
Them old linemen better go get Willie Anderson and get their technique right.
Yeah, ain't lying, man. All right. Like this.
Let's move to Baltimore where the Ravens have cooled off after a hot start, losing 3 in a row and dropping down to 500 on the year. Joe Flacco looked sharp to start the year, but has been ineffective the last few weeks. And now John Harbaugh admits he's open to Lamar Jackson playing a full series and possibly even more.
You know, Joe's played well, so I don't want to get into all that. You know, that's just, you know, we're rolling right now with what we got. But, of course, at some point in time, I mean, this guy's a quarterback, and I want to see Lamar on the field too. How to do that, you know, is kind of what we're working through. So that's what we got to figure out.
All right, Flacco's struggles actually extend beyond the Ravens' losing streak with the quarterback among the worst in the league over the last 5 weeks, during which he's gone just 1-4. Look, I'm still not going to Lamar Jackson. I don't think he's ready. I think you could throw him out there too soon and undermine his confidence. I never liked Lamar Jackson going to Baltimore. I felt like John Harbaugh was going to get fired after this year, and we already know Ozzie Newsome is on his way out. So he's going to be playing for a new general manager, a new head coach. I just don't think he's ready yet. And if they throw him out there while they're still somewhat in the race, playoff contention, I think it's too much pressure and can undermine his confidence.
I think this is about John Harbaugh and self-preservation. You know, first law of nature, man. I just got to survive it. Survive and then thrive. Worry about that later, his confidence, how he'll respond. This is a moment where you just say, hey, man, in case of emergency, I got to break glass and get that extinguisher out. Put this smoke out, which is Joe Flacco, who is not responding in a year where they draft at your position in the first round. You're put on notice. Everybody knows how that goes in the NFL. And this is how you respond of late. So if I'm looking at this, I know what I have to do if I'm John Harbaugh. And nothing's done by accident. If I'm John Harbaugh, the reason why I want to give him a series is because I'm starting to say I need to give this guy an opportunity because you are not performing up to capabilities. So we've all been there. When you're the man, there's no such thing as rotation. I determine rotation, coach. You know, when I was the man, coach, they didn't even – I was like, I'm tired. They're like, stay in there because you're the man. But when you're not the man and you still think you're the man, what happens? I remember calling Coach Sappy, hey, Wiley, let's let Dingo get a couple of them third downs.
Hey, where you coming from? That's so true, bro. Right? That is so true.
That's where we are right here. That's it.
Harbaugh basically is saying, Flacco ain't getting it done. We going to find a way to Lamar get in. And if Lamar Jackson gets in and plays well, Harbaugh can say, okay, we can work with him next year. I'm with you. You can't throw him in there until they're eliminated from playoff contention. It's just impossible. He didn't play well in the preseason. Now, and he was seeing vanilla defenses and guys that aren't even in the league right now. So what you going to do against starters when they're throwing the kitchen sink at you? He's not ready unless he's improved a lot during the season. There's no way, and if he has, it wouldn't be a talk about it. They'd just be putting him in there.
But what about Harbaugh? He's like, my job's on the line. I get this, your career, your confidence, but what about me?
Harbaugh's watching practice every week. He knows Lamar ain't ready. You put him in there, you might be gone the week after.
Yeah. I mean, Lamar Jackson isn't ready to play. I mean, Joe Flacco's not playing good. I don't care what Harbaugh says. He's playing good. No, he's not playing good at all. But to go to Lamar Jackson right now is – you'll have a mutiny on your hands. That team will not, I don't think, get behind Lamar Jackson at this point in the season, still having a chance to compete and having a chance to, you know, make it to the playoffs. And so, but I do understand moving forward, Joe Flacco is not worth the $26 million you're paying him this year. He's not going to be worth the $28 that he's supposed to get.
Oh, he gone. This is last year.
He gone.
So if we know for a fact he's gone, even though Lamar's not ready, maybe it's not a bad idea just to get him out there.
But no. I should have asked this question before the show. Where's RG3? I thought RG3 was in this mix.
He doesn't even dress. He doesn't even dress. He's the third quarterback. Yeah. Lamar's the number
one. You know what's funny? He's actually the second quarterback on roster, but he's the third quarterback in terms of availability.
And the crazy thing is, crazy. I would actually, if Lamar Jackson isn't ready, I would give RG3 a chance. Yeah. Mm. Show him. I would give him a chance. Well, and because if you play Lamar Jackson, in my opinion, you have to overhaul the entire offense. Let's go zone read. Let's do what you did in college. And if you get hurt, it is what it is.
To Marcellus's point, though, about survival, if John Harbaugh could get Lamar on the field and Lamar shows
some spark,
then John Harbaugh, see, I'm the guy. It's me and my crew that have Lamar playing well, and you can sell that for a reason to keep me next season.
Is Cam Cameron still the OC?
No, it's Marty Morningway.
See,
think about this, though. Yeah. With that defense that Baltimore has, if he can just give them anything offensively, we're talking Lamar Jackson, they're going to be in every game because defensively they're so strong. Just don't turn the ball over. They'll be in every game.
It's funny that Joe Flacco got the memo, too, about survival because Joe Flacco out there sabotaging Lamar Jackson. I mean, he's sabotaging the whole team.
He was wide open.
Joe Flacco, you got to be better than this, bro. Look at in motion, so I know you're on the field.
Yeah.
Wide open, throwing it to double coverage.
And you're supposed to read when he does that. You're reading the flat defender. The flat defender collapses.
Right.
You out-leverage him. You throw him the ball.
Yeah.
Crazy.
And earlier in the year, he tried to throw him a suicide ball. Remember that? He tried to throw it right into cover so he could get his head knocked off. Joe Flacco, we see what you're doing out there.
All right, great job, TJ D'Angelo. Whitlock and Wiley, we're joined now by Fox basketball analyst Jim Jackson. Let's move to college basketball, where number 4 Duke made a huge statement last night, blowing out number 2 Kentucky by 34 points with dominant debuts from their freshman superstars, with R.J. Barrett dropping 33, Zion Williamson dropping 28, and Cam Reddish adding 22 of his own. They were so good,
that they're already drawing comparisons to another legendary college team, the Fab Five. Both teams had four McDonald's All-American, and while it's just one game, the combined numbers look pretty favorable for Duke's Fab Four. All right, I covered the Fab Five, so I probably got a little bit of a bias here. That's where I made my bones in Ann Arbor. But these kids for Duke do look special, and they're going to be facing a lot less resistance than the Fab Five did back in the 90s.
Yeah, I mean, just watching the game last night, one, the resistance that you were facing in that game, the number two team in the country.
on paper.
Say what you want. Yeah. It ended quickly on the wood. I mean, it was like over before it started, and you saw these top three recruits all on one roster proving that we can have instant chemistry and do something special at the collegiate level when we are kind of losing that story of late. So I was seriously impressed. As I'm looking at my three-year-old son, who I hate to be that father. I don't want to be LeVar Ball. But I don't want my son to play football just because his fingers don't need to look like this. You know what I mean? Like, go out there when you get hit, get a free throw out of it. Don't just go in for the next play. But I'm like, R.J. Barrett, that was the one for me.
Right.
Jimmy, I defer. Where is that talent going to land in terms of going forward?
Well, I'm
going
to go back because I was there, unfortunately, for the Fab Five. I lost to him in the Elite Eight, even though we beat him twice that year. The similarities are the hype, the athleticism, the Showtime effect. The differences is on the bench. I think we talked about this between Steve Fisher and Mike Krzyzewski.
The Steve Fisher at Michigan.
At Michigan.
At San Diego State,
he was great.
Hell of a coach.
But he was just kind of biting or cutting his teeth in regards to what he wanted. But when you look at both of the teams, and I think you brought up a good point, and so did you, Jason, at that time it was us, it was Indiana, it was Purdue, it was different teams that were older. That gave Michigan problems. Keep in mind, Michigan never won the Big Ten, and they really never won anything of significance more than the adulation of a lot of people. So now what you look with this Duke team, a lot of teams are young. So now they're going to be able to compete against these teams without the resistance. Their biggest challenge is going to be complacency because things are going to come so easy so early, and I think that's where having a Mike Krzyzewski on the bench kind of squashes a lot of that, allows them to be focused. Because here's your USA Olympic team coach. They got all-stars all the time.
Listen, it's going to be hard for me, no matter how well they play. I'm going to be the old man. It's like, come on, man. I was there for the Fab Five. I saw them play big dog Glenn Robinson. Mm-hmm. I saw them go to Cameron Indoor Arena and play Bobby Hurley, Christian Laettner, Grant Hill. I saw them face great resistance and perform really, really well. And it's Kentucky, North Carolina in the championships. I just don't think this Duke team and these kids are going to face that kind of resistance because even when they play an experienced team, they're still going to have this way major talent advantage.
Hey, look, let's really compare it in terms of the numbers. You're talking about a Fab Five team that lost 9 games before they go to the finals and lose in the finals. But so they had their own roller coaster to go through. This team right now, we don't know the level of complacency that may occur because, hey, we are just that good. But I don't see this team losing 9 games once. So in terms of the numbers, they're going to come out with a better record and maybe a better outcome and winning the championship. Beyond that, their hype was known. We saw it. We're in social media times. The Fab Five, for me, sitting up here in L.A., I just looked up one day and saw baggy shorts. I saw ball heads, and I saw black shoes, and I said, I'm in. And so there's something with expectations that the Fab Five will always have favor over a team in this era.
Yeah, because when the Fab Five came in, that wasn't the original starting lineup. Eric Rowley was in that lineup. Kirk Taylor was in that lineup.
Michael Talley
was in that lineup. So now they after the year kind of took off, they kind of knew that these guys needed to play. A couple things, too. The adversity, we beat Michigan twice that year. They were a better team come tournament time, much better team come tournament time. So the expectation level wasn't the same coming in for those guys as it is with a Duke. But I will say this, though. I think this is great in some aspects for college basketball. For the fan that really is not following college basketball, now they get a chance to tune into something exciting, something we haven't seen Fab Five UNLV team of 91 when they went undefeated. Now there's a pressure to say, okay, can this team go undefeated? Is this something that college basketball can promote and follow? Because we need that push a little bit more because you have a team full of stars and people now want to tune in to see stars.
I'm sorry to go here this late in the segment, but I got to go here. Maybe we'll get to it again tomorrow. I'm just sitting here blown away thinking about how long I've been covering sports, following sports. And this Duke team has become what Michigan was. And Michigan was the rebel team, the black team that made people uncomfortable. When you go back to the Georgetown Hoya paranoia, there was a cultural force. Black coach, black team, John Thompson intimidating. Here you come with Jalen Rose and the bald head, the baggy shorts, the black socks. Rebellious. That rebellion now at Duke, will it sell the way that it did?
It's different though. You had dudes from the neighborhood. Jalen Juwan from Chicago. But here's the thing about it. RJ Barrett's from Canada. I mean, that came to school here. Zion Williamson from South Carolina. Yeah. I mean, so it's not the same intimidation or I think the
But it's also Duke, the team everybody Duke. Hates.
I know, but they're still kind of good guys. Compared to what people try to portray of the Fab Five, which was a totally different portrayal.
Yeah, we saw this coming, though. Coach K stood idle while Coach Calipari went out there and said, one and done, that's how our program is, and that's how it's going to be. And then every year at the draft, you saw Coach Calipari having guy after guy. And Coach K finally got off that fence. He said, you know what? I'm buying into one and done. Yep. That's going to have a different complexion in the game of basketball.
Say that
not
again.
Not a different character, but a different complexion. So, hey, Duke, I saw it coming.
Duke has become Michigan. Duke is the new Fab Five. That's amazing.
That's crazy.
All right, welcome back, Whitlock and Wiley. We're joined now by Fox College football analyst Joel Klatt. Let's move to our favorite subject, Jim Harbaugh, whose Michigan Wolverines have climbed their way into the latest college football playoff rankings for the first time this year. If the season ended today, number 4 Michigan would take on number 1 Alabama, who looked pretty unstoppable after an incredible 29-0 rout of LSU in Baton Rouge. This says in prompt, I think Michigan has a chance. No, I don't. It's Nick Saban. And it's Alabama. Who's writing this stuff in the prompter? I think it's awesome what Michigan has done, but they ain't Bama yet.
No, not at all. Respect to Jim Harbaugh, riding all the criticism, all the haters out there. I was one of the guys saying, look, I believe in Jim Harbaugh, just need to find his identity. I remember you saying the same exact thing. You sitting on the island, Jason Whitlock, and now we have proven you wrong. But if I'm Alabama and you give me, what, 3 weeks to a month?
Yeah,
and I have to.
That's tough.
Doesn't number 1 play number 4?
Yes.
Boy, you're talking about Nick Saban sending out limos for all of Michigan to show up to that game.
I wouldn't say all of them.
Oh, yes. You know why?
The defensive ends for Michigan ain't no joke.
Dude, Alabama is called trench warriors. Why they're always Alabama is because up front, that's the difference. They're not. Look at LSU come in, vaunted attack, looking amazing. -1 rushing yards in the first half. LSU. And they were, what, third ranked at the time, man? I'm telling you, it's Alabama by a landslide.
So I've gone back and forth on this. And up until the last couple of weeks, I would have said, along with you guys, no shot. I mean, Alabama is just so far and away better than everybody, really, maybe save for Clemson. And I still think that's the case to some extent. But there are two teams that if you pit them against Alabama, you can make a case that they would be within 2 scores. And you might be thinking to yourself, like, hey, 2 scores is like everything. Right. But
limo. That's a limo.
Bring out the limos for. In college football, that's 1 turnover. You know, that's 1 return, special teams touchdown, and now all of a sudden, you know, you're in a ball game, and that's all you would ask for if you're playing Alabama. You're playing this good of a football team. All you're going to ask for is a chance in the fourth quarter, a chance in the fourth. That's like the Denver Broncos being double-digit underdogs to the Green Bay Packers in 1997 in the Super Bowl. All you want is a chance in the fourth quarter. And I think Michigan is one of the teams, along with Oklahoma and Clemson, that would have a chance. And the reason is because Michigan's defense is so dominant.
It is.
So dominant. Right now, they are getting after the quarterback. They're the number 1 pass defense in the country. They're one of the few teams that could actually line up with Tua and give him problems. You know, maybe get to him. Maybe get into his head a little bit. Again, I'm not saying that they would, but they're one of the few teams that would actually get on the field and compete well. One of the things that they have now that they didn't at the beginning of the season is a bona fide passing attack. They didn't have that when they faced Notre Dame, but now Shea Patterson has grown up in the offense a little bit. I think he has matured in this Jim Harbaugh offense, and he's got a full complement of wide receivers. And trust me when I tell you guys this, these guys on the outside are dudes. They are dudes. Donovan Peoples-Jones, Tariq Black, who's back from injury, Nico Collins. Yeah, so, would they beat Alabama? Probably not. Would they be one of the rare teams that were in two touchdowns?
Joe Klatt, you have earned your check for the day, filling all that time just to get to the same conclusion. They are going to get smoked. Oh. And let me tell you this. We've always heard the narrative about Alabama. The one criticism we always said is if they found the quarterback.
Now they did.
To the tune of the second best in passing efficiency. Yeah. In the NCAA. So now they have a quarterback with those trench warriors, with the defense they always have, with the best coach in the game. I don't understand where we're going with this. Michigan looks amazing. They have climbed a big hill and mountain since week one, Notre Dame.
Yeah.
They are a different team. I think they're better than Notre Dame right now at this moment in the way that they're playing football, especially after the Penn State win. But do we understand what they would have to do in terms of offense matching against their defense?
That'd be tough.
That's the point. They would just go out there and slow drip them to death.
I think Michigan's improved greatly. Devin Bush in the middle of that defense.
Wait, have you come around on Harbaugh?
Yes, I have.
Let's not bury the lead.
No. Look, he still needs to beat Ohio State, but he's done a hell of a job. Played
so
great.
So he's not overrated?
No, not right at the now. Because, one, we now have him properly rated below Saban, below Meyer, but right there. An elite college football coach.
I'm with you.
We're finally eye to eye. He's now proven, justified your position. But I look at, to me, Higdon, Michigan's running back, is a nice Big Ten running back.
Yeah, Caron Higdon.
I don't think he's a SEC running back. I really don't. I think Alabama's got two or three guys just as good, if not better.
Maybe, and LSU has proven to us time and time again, you can't just win with a running game.
No.
Nope.
That's why I pointed out that passing game. Those three receivers on the outside, because I think it would take a great passing game, Oklahoma-esque, Clemson-esque, to go in there and compete with Alabama.
But now I think you, because of Alabama's offense, because of Tua, now you got to keep pace with Alabama. It's not just, and I just think that's impossible to do. Nick Saban, the best coach, now has the best quarterback in college football. That's a recipe for disaster.
I will say this. If you tell me that regardless of who the opponent is, it's going to be a track meet, I would tell you the only team that would be comfortable in that situation is Oklahoma. Because they're in it every week.
Yeah.
You tell them, like, first to 50, they're like, all right, we call it Saturday.
But they're going to give up 60.
Yeah, they will. Right. I mean, that game, that model, if you look at all the
statistics. I don't think that little bitty quarterback, though, for Oklahoma, I don't like him against Alabama's defense.
I do, and the reason is because every time that they face a guy that is that good with his legs, they tend to struggle. A guy that can throw it in combination with his legs, they tend to struggle. Chad Kelly was one of those guys. Johnny Manziel was one of those guys. Trevor Knight in a bowl game loss to Oklahoma was one of those guys. He's the one player, that's the one offense that I think Alabama would really struggle with.
My favorite segment, Antisocial.
Yeah, baby, let's do this.
Darnell Smith, our social media manager, is here. Tell us what's popping on these Twitter streets.
Oh, wait a minute. Where's the shirt?
Yeah, what's up, man? You ain't repping Ball State or Warren Central.
Nothing.
Y'all see my helmet's right here. I'm always repping.
Where's the shirt at? What happened?
I had to wash. Yesterday was wash day. I was up late. It was a long story.
Your segment is 7 minutes. You can't just wear it again the next day?
I sweat a
lot. I thought you was engaged to be married, man. Where's the help?
I'm in the NFL.
Better get out of that. Abort. Abort.
Yes, hold on. Yes, I'm engaged. Mel, I love you. She's not out here yet. So, long story. Don't give me. Come on now.
Yeah,
I know she watching. I better stop playing.
Yeah, good call. Get out of that.
All right, man. Let's start off in the NFL, where Le'Veon Bell announced on Twitter Monday that he was leaving Miami, but it was unclear where he was going. Well, yesterday, a photo surfaced on Twitter that the Steelers All-Pro running back playing in a pickup basketball game at a Pittsburgh area LA Fitness. Now that Dez has found a landing spot, you guys think Le'Veon will be playing this season?
He's playing pickup basketball.
Yes.
That does not look like the smart thing to do if you're planning to play football. You can get hurt out there playing pickup basketball with some jokers, right?
You get hurt doing anything if you're trying to really go get it. Look, this is what a lot of the skilled position players like to do, to get their run. They say there's no better cardio than playing some pickup basketball or a little boxing. So, look, I'm not mad at this, but everyone's asking, is he going back to play this year?
Have you ever been to the Miami airport and seen TSA and they say, sir, you're flying to Pittsburgh. What is the reason to travel? Every single person ever has checked work. No one ever is like, oh, I'm just going to kick it in Pittsburgh. So guess what? He's going there to get his business done. He's going there to be
He's playing pickup basketball. That's very dangerous. If I'm Mike Tomlin, I'm not happy with that.
Nah, man, that's how you get your run. Get the cardio up, see? Right. You need to play a little more pickup. Get your game up. Get your game up.
All right, Darnell, what's next?
Yeah, speaking of Dez, he will reportedly sign a one-year deal with the Saints tomorrow. Once the news broke, a couple of Dez's former teammates tweeted their support, including Cole Beasley, who said, quote, congrats, bro. Go do your thing. And Jalen Smith saying, quote, 11-29, big bro. You and me, jersey swap. I'm calling first dibs, fam. Congrats. The Saints head to Jerry World on November 29th to take on Dez's former team on Thursday Night Football. Do you guys think Dez will get his revenge on the Cowboys?
That'll probably be the game Dez implodes on the sidelines when it's the fourth quarter and he's only got one target and a half of a catch. That's when he implodes.
He's stupid.
But, you know, I don't blame Cole Beasley and these guys for showing him some love.
Boy, if you put Dak at cornerback, you see him go. Now, he get his revenge if Dak was playing defense. But, look, he ain't going against a guy that he's obviously upset at. I think Dez is going to be just fine. Slotted as a 3 or 4 receiver on the Saints with Drew Brees, getting the dime cornerback. The dime cornerback is like some 6th-round dude who is in his second year, still trying to figure out the NFL. And you got him lined up against Dez Bryant, play in, play out, he's going to go spaz. And shout out to Cole Beasley, too, for the great rapping career he's got going. I like Cole Beasley.
His revenge would be the Saints winning the Super Bowl, and I think there's a better chance of that than Dez reemerging as a premier receiver.
Oh, interesting. All
right. Darnell, what's next?
Yep. Moving on to last night's election night, many athletes and celebrities have been vocal in their support for Beto O'Rourke for the Senate, but last night he lost a tight race to Ted Cruz. Shortly after the results, Warriors head coach Steve Kerr put out this tweet saying, Beto 2020. You guys like Steve Kerr giving out his 2 cents here?
It's the same thing I said about LeBron James. Where does Steve Kerr coach?
Go
California.
State.
He's in Well,
he did play for the Spurs for a while.
No, you know what? I take it back because he's not talking about Texas politics anymore. I think he's talking about presidential.
President. There you go.
So he wants to throw his support around behind Beto. I got no problem with it.
Good.
I still don't think he knows what he's talking about. Beto is a Twitter feed that has gone viral, and everybody, that's all everybody knows, Beto off of Twitter. Nobody knows him. Didn't the dude have a DUI and all? Look, I don't get into politics.
Oh, really? We going to start throwing stones?
I don't get into politics, so I'm just going to leave
it alone. Oh, we going to start throwing stones, because, boy, there's going to be a lot of rocks coming back. I respect that he has an opinion. Obviously, he's trying to pay this forward and galvanize people to just go out there and vote. I know it gets a little corny because you're questioning the depth of it. But the reality is, when I was at the polls yesterday, I'm sure, not you,
I
but other people
were
at the polls, were able to see the energy. We got people are voting in droves right now with a different energy, and I think that's a positive. Will we get a positive reaction and consequence from it? We'll see, but at least you got people going to the polls. I like it.
I wish we had shown the Beyonce deal because I thought she looked silly, whatever she was doing.
What was that?
I don't have it. She had some hat on and doing all this with the Beto.
That's it. That is, she ain't throwing up.
What did he say?
What you saying she throwing up?
I saw somebody. I think I saw a different picture of her like this.
Beyonce
anyway.
Has never looked any worse than beautiful. And so throwing this up or whatever you talking about.
I need to leave politics alone. Let me shut my mouth.
Out of it.
I don't like talking about it.
Why don't you vote next time?
I don't even like talking about it. What's next, Darnell?
All right, man, last but not least, on Lock It In yesterday, my guy, Cousin Sal, was talking about Golden State, and he had an interesting point on the only team that could possibly stop them. Take a listen.
The only team that could stop Golden State is Alabama. Alabama has 9 wins by 20-plus points. Oh, look at that. Isn't that fun? Golden State only has 4, but I promise they'll catch up. I think on a neutral court, the Warriors are a 2.5-point favorite.
Who would y'all bet your life on, Golden State or Alabama?
I would bet it on Alabama to win the national championship more than Golden State winning the NBA title because Nick Saban is 20 times the coach Steve Kerr is.
Wow.
20 times.
Battle 2020. Battle 2020.
Mark Jackson built that team.
For no reason.
Mark Jackson built that team.
Admit
Mark Jackson built the team.
Nick Saban built Alabama.
Okay, that's great. And Tony Dungy built the Bucks. But you know what? John Gruden got the damn championship. Man, I want to hear about who built it. It's who owns it, who lived it, who actually did it. I will say this. I bet on both teams winning their championships. But a better conversation is Alabama in basketball or Golden State in football. Who would win that one? And that's easy. Alabama in basketball, right? Would you go there? Would you go there?
I have no idea what you're talking
you
about.
You want to go there? Did they play the pickup game?
Is Uncle Jimmy here early?
Right. I want to see it. Put Alabama on the court. And then put Golden State on the field. Let's see how that plays.
Yeah, well, I wanted to think about that one. That'll be a thinking cap tomorrow. Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about our approval rating for Hugh Jackson. Uncle Jimmy, welcome.
Oh, my God.
What is that?
Every day. What it look like?
SEAL team?
SEAL team.
You active duty now.
Yeah, you a SEAL?
I'm a public servant.
You're a public servant what, the Navy SEALs?
Public servant. Thank you very much. 0630. zero dark 30. Zero. That was called? I'm the dark.
Please tell me, like, what kind of physical activities you did to actually become a Navy SEAL? There's no way.
I served in Operation Brightside. Don't worry about what I do, man.
You could not pass the physical with your cholesterol.
You don't worry about what I can
with
pass.
With your cholesterol, wait. You did not pass the physical. Don't lie.
Zero dark 30, that's... You killed Osama bin Laden, is that what you said?
Did you see who did it? It was too dark.
I know what to do.
It was too dark.
Hold on, Uncle Jimmy, please show me. I see something on the side, that patch, man. Oh, my. Isn't that the Popeye's logo? Like,
We got to go.
Ain't be no Navy SEAL.
Some shame to this game or something, man?
What?
Hold on, they can't see me coming. Come on, man.
Oh, we got to get to Hugh Jackson in our conversation earlier. Here's a highlight of our discussion with Hugh Jackson.
Man.
Hugh, I've been dying to have a conversation with you for a long time. I got to get right to it, Hugh.
Let's do it.
Ego, man. Mm-hmm. I think you are an extremely talented football coach.
Mm-hmm.
But I think ego has undermined your career as a head football coach in the NFL. How do you respond?
Well, I respect your opinion. I don't really see it that way.
Ego made you take that Cleveland job and work with some people that weren't football people. That's ego, Hugh. All money ain't good money. It's like playing dominoes. All money.
I'm behind him.
Big stakes.
Jimmy, what did you think of our conversation with Hugh?
Hey, man, I'm going to tell you, I think Hugh was about to get with you, man. I'm for real, bro. You was about to get hit like some good weed in the jailhouse, man. you messing around here with hey, man, that's a G you messing with, man.
Triple.
You from Compton, man. What's wrong with you?
Yeah,
look, I was trying to respectfully ask Hugh if he had the self-awareness to realize that perhaps he undermined himself with his ego.
Do you sometimes have the self-awareness to realize that you undermine yourself with your ego?
Get him. Thank you.
As I told Hugh earlier, I had to learn from that and course correct and make some adjustments. That's all I'm saying, Hugh.
In a way that you were badgering the witness, but you kept going back.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much. I love the fact that you went there and you were going bullseye, but he stood his ground. He stood his ground, which was interesting.
He did stand his ground. I was kind of, to be honest with you, I was more impressed with Hugh today than I've seen. I read the interview he did with Cleveland.com where I thought he made a lot of excuses. I've seen some other places where I thought he made a lot of excuses. I thought we did collectively a good job of getting him to a real place.
We'll see your approval rating.
My approval rating really didn't change, though.
Oh.
Hugh was still a dumpster fire.
All that talk.
And so when we get to job performance, I got to give him a one. He's been fired. It could have been a zero.
All right.
All-time greatness takes a dip. You've been fired. You put 3-36 on your resume.
Lord.
Character, I went up, though.
Okay.
After this interview, I went up to 2 points to a 12. And then I thought, Hugh, to be honest, I thought this was the most authentic I've seen, Hugh. And so I went up to a 23. Still a dumpster fire.
Still a dumpster fire.
Character and authenticity went up.
Wow, man. It's easy to just persuade you. You get around somebody, oh, I think he's more likable. Hey, look, I keep it 100. Job performance, Oh, God, Lord. One. feel bad saying this though, because I like the man. All-time greatness, same dude. Look, he didn't play a game, he didn't coach a game. Same, three. Now, let's talk about authenticity right here.
Ask Whitlock about some authenticity.
Whitlock, how in the hell do you have him at a 23?
He kept it real while he was here. He was very authentic.
This ain't keeping it real. I respect your opinion, Whitlock. You know damn well he don't respect your opinion, Whitlock. He up here lying. He was lying through his teeth because he's like, look, I still got a job to get. I got to go out there and get some other
How many number one draft picks did you have this year? Who did he draft for his number one pick?
Baker Mayfield.
Hey, when Jason was in Kansas City and we ran the show, he drafted somebody named Megan.